everybody. Recruiting Animal here. January 27th, 2009. We're here at a special time today because we have to accommodate our special guests. They're recruiters in Australia. It's 8 p.m. on Tuesday in Toronto, but it's lunchtime on Wednesday down there. And that's the regular time for this show, so we're doing it on a regular time in Australia. And before we get going, I want to say some words about Australia, and Canada, to be exact. A few years ago, right at the peak of the war on terror, a friend of mine called me and asked me, "Hey, Animal, why are Australians so much tougher than Canadians? Look," he said, "Canada and Australia, they're sister countries. They're both English colonies, right? And they developed at the same time in the 1800s. And back then, Canadians, we were real men, lumberjacks, fur trappers, miners. That was the picture people had of Canadians. We were wild. Wild, wild men. But now, when the government votes to send our troops into action against the Taliban, everybody starts shouting, "Hey, wait a second. Canadians are peacekeepers. We're not peacemakers. Our soldiers, we're nice guys. Our soldiers are nice guys." That's what I wanted to say. "And that means no fighting." "What happened?" said my friend. "Look at the Aussies. They got John Howard down there. He was their prime minister at the time, and they're tough as ever. I mean," this is what he said to me, "I mean, who would you rather have as a buddy in a fight? Jim Carrey, he's Canadian, or Mel Gibson and his lethal weapon? Or Russell Crowe, the gladiator? Not Austin Powers, he's Canadian." "Well, look," I said, "hey, take it easy on us. We're right on the border with the USA. They're a big country, we're a little one. They run the world, we run nothing. The only way we can have any dignity at all is to praise ourselves for being the opposite of them. So if they're cowboys, we're bureaucrats. If they're fighters, we're sissies, and we're proud of it. We go around telling everybody how civilized we are. And just we do that, we only do it to prove that we're better than them. But the Australians, I'm almost finished, bear with me. They're out there in the middle of nowhere. They don't have to compare themselves to anybody at all. So, you know, they were founded by convicts way back when, and they still have that outlaw frame of mind. Anyway, that made sense to my friend, and it made sense to me at the time, until today, I have to say, because we set up this show last week, and we had three Australians who were going to come on and speak to us. Then a few days ago, the girl, the representative of women recruiters, Kelly, she dropped out. And now, just before the show, a guy named Martin Warren, a recruiting trainer, he decided he wasn't going to keep his commitment. And I had to ask myself, is this the outlaw spirit, or is it just plain ignorance? I'm really curious to see what the surviving guests have to say when they speak to me, the Recruiting Animal, on the Recruiting Animal Show!
Oh, yeah.
I'm here.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Animal.
Okay, great. We got some people. Listen, we're going to do the introductions in a few minutes, but I want to know what happened with those two sissies. How come they aren't here?
Oh, come on, Animal, you scared them off. They told them to listen to your stuff, and you must have scared them.
Yeah, okay. Some outlaws. You know what? That was my first question. Hold on a second. Don't make me hang up on you already. Listen, my first question for you guys was, in school, you know how you're supposed to honor your ancestors? Did they tell you guys to hold on to your criminal tradition?
Certainly.
My house colors were named after bushrangers, mate. All criminals.
Your ancestors were criminals? Is that what you're saying?
May as well have been to stay here.
Yeah, okay. You know, because I think Maureen's on the line. I think criminals would make very good recruiters and especially very good sorcerers. But that's what I was hoping. Anyway, I'm mad at those two guys, and you got to tell them I could ruin them, okay? But I won't. I've vented my spleen. I talked to Jerry Albright just before the show, and Jerry's the guy who set this up. I'll just give him a little credit. He has been writing me all week. He said, this is going to be great. I hope you think so. This is going to be your big breakthrough in Australia. I'm working tirelessly to help you, on and on. So, Jerry, if it goes lousy, if it's a lousy show, I'm going to blame it on you and your buddy, Dan Neru. Okay, Dan Neru, introduce yourself. Speak up.
Dan Neru here, at a balmy 104 degrees day here in Melbourne.
140 degrees. It's about 10 or 15 below centigrade. Anyway, okay, Dan Neru. Who else is there? You guys don't sound very good. Who else is there from Australia?
Hi, Animal. My name's Ross Clinett. I'm also from Melbourne, so I'm online as well.
Okay, Ross. And is Michael Speck there?
I certainly am sitting here. It's also in Melbourne, so we're all very hot here.
Oh, boy, it's funny to hear Mike after all this time. And who's here on the American side? Maureen Sharap, the queen bee of telephone sourcing. Have you guys ever heard of her?
Sure have.
Yep.
Great.
Once or twice.
Okay.
Wow.
Jerry Albright. Jerry, verbalsummary.com.
Hi,
guys. Do you arrange the show?
Well,
area code 408. Who are you?
Hey, it's William holding down California.
Hey, Billy the orangutan. I brought this guy on specially to answer Michael's questions about CRM and ATS and all the stuff I don't know anything about. And somebody from Ottawa is calling. Area code 613. Who's that? You don't have to say. That's a Canadian, by the way. If he's a sissy, too. Okay.
No, he's the draft dodger.
Yeah, well, I told you. Same thing. Okay, let's get going.
Wait. What about me? Mike, hello.
I didn't even see you there.
I'm always here.
Okay, J.D. Jason Davis of RecruitingBlogs.com.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Jay.
You're not showing up. Okay, thank you, J.D. Okay, I'm just going to introduce everybody very briefly myself. Danny Neru. This is how he introduces himself on his blog. I'm in my mid-30s. I love what I do, and I love my family. What makes me different? My left-of-center outlook on life and careers. What are you, communist? What is that supposed to mean?
Whatever you want it to be, man.
Well, I don't know. You're supposed to tell me. Come on. Don't play coy. You're here to talk. What's it mean? Oh, you got to not listen. I'll tell you something else, everybody. You know what this guy's blog is all about? Children's books. He's a recruiter, and he tries to find business lessons in children's books. Tell me
true. I like that, personally.
Okay, good for you. You're into that, too, Jerry. I never would have expected it.
Well,
Winnie
got
the Pooh. Okay, you got kids. Okay, Michael Specht, I have to tell you, Michael Specht is one of my social media heroes. I know everything about him. I mean, I read his blog for a number of years, so I know about his marital status and his little boy. And now that he's been on Twitter, I know when he gets up in the morning, what he eats for breakfast, when he goes to bed. I'd recognize him on the street in his beard and his baseball cap. I don't know. The only thing he's missing is one of those webcams that are on his TV facing his bed 24/7. That's coming next, eh, Mike?
It is, and I'm also doing a daily photo thing on Flickr so you can keep up with my movements day by day.
Yeah. I think I know more than I want. Okay, now, Ross, you're the kind of guy we want. You are arrogant. You are not modest at all, and I can prove it very easily. At your website, rossclennett.com, that's RossClennett.com, you say, welcome to the only site for unbiased, forthright, and practical material on recruitment and talent issues generally, and the Australian recruitment industry specifically. But I have to tell you, Ross, you sent us a bunch of questions. I'm not interested in any of those things, and I don't know if anyone else here is either. If they do, you know, maybe we'll answer some of your questions. So anybody else have something to say about the intros? I want to get them over with.
Sounds good, Animal.
Okay.
Hey, you are really just warming everybody up. We love
good,
it.
Good,
we're feeling good about ourselves.
Very good, Jerry. I know you're worried if it's a success, this show. But listen, here's my first question. It just to, you know, if you hear a baby, she's with Maureen, okay? She's part of the show. She's like a regular here. She's going to grow up all knowing about all anyway, forget it. Anyway.
You're training them young there.
Yeah, here's they start them young in the States. I'm not there. Okay,
Animal's
listen.
Not one of yours?
Yes. Maybe, I don't know. Okay, listen. Listen, how much education does a recruiter need? I've never asked this question before, but really, how much education does a recruiter need? Dan, I'll go to you first. Danny, I'll go to you first. Do you need a university education to be a recruiter? If you don't have an answer, just say so and I'll move on. No dead air.
Stunned silence.
Okay, Michael Speck, are you there? You want to answer in this guy's place?
Oh, I can do that. Well, how much do they need or how much do they have? Most have very little, but they need a lot of we need to increase the education of recruiters on how to...
Really? Hold on. Most recruiters have very little education in Australia? What does that mean exactly? Are they just hustlers who get on a phone? Is that what you're saying?
Yep. If you look at the transactional recruiters, yeah, a lot of hustlers as opposed to, the old headhunter sources type who actually try to find candidates for their clients and place people in roles.
I don't know what you're saying, Mike. Come on. Let me ask somebody from the real world. Does somebody in North America, do you think, Jerry, do you think recruiters have to have an education?
They should, but in most cases they don't.
They don't? I think they do. I say most recruiters are university educated here.
I disagree.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you don't know anything about here.
Well,
JD.
I know about myself.
You know what, Mike?
Yeah.
I think Dan has been eliminated from your couch.
How come?
Well, he just said someone tell Animal that he's out.
Him too? These guys? You know, Mike, Michael Specht, are you leaving or are you going to stick around?
I'll stick around.
And what about the other guy, Ross? Are you still in with us?
No. Dan's trying. Is he connected?
I don't know.
He says
okay.
His line in is off.
Okay. Okay, and he's got an excuse. He's faking. I just let everybody know, sorry. The guy's in Australia. He thinks he can use the phone excuse. He's faking. Okay, that question didn't go over well. I personally think recruiters don't have to be educated, although, you know, if they have some experience in their field, like IT, I know Jerry must know something about IT already. Jerry, I didn't know that. You didn't go to university?
No.
Did you go to
some read?
Did you go to some kind of community college?
I started college and I did not like it.
Really? What were you taking? What was your major?
Well, just general business classes, and once I realized that they weren't taking attendance like they did in high school, that was all I needed to hear.
You know, I think he went to school with George Bush. Anyway, at Harvard. Hey, Mike, okay, let me just ask you this. You can answer. Michael Specht, did you go to university?
No, I did not.
Really? What grade did you get to in high school then? Grade
12?
I left
high school, but I did better than Jerry. I got accepted and never turned up.
Really?
Well, I got accepted and I quit. So
I just didn't bother going.
So I did a little better than you. I showed up and then I quit.
Okay, what about Ross? Ross?
Yeah, I did a Bachelor of Economics, which I managed to see through and graduate in.
Uh-huh. And do you think that has helped you in your business life?
Well, it helped me to start with because I was recruiting accountants, so I was marketing to CFOs and financial controllers, so it was certainly helpful that I could talk about business with people like that, but for other sorts of recruitment, like blue-collar, industrial, probably not as important, but certainly for me, I think it was very important in giving me some credibility in front of CFOs.
Really? Maureen judges the sexiness of the callers. Is that accent sexy, Maureen? She cut off. She's got to take care of the baby.
I'd like to say something. His phone sounds great. What kind of connection do you have there, Ross? What did you call in on?
Well, I just dialed straight in on International Connect, so it's just a direct line from
my
office.
Sounds better than most people here in the States.
That is good, Ross. Congratulations. You got one over for Australia. Okay.
You'll probably get an award for it at the Animal Awards next year.
Next year. Listen, Ross, well, here's something we never discussed before, blue-collar recruiting. Are you talking about staffing, getting like 100 workers in a couple of days for somebody who needs a fast job? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah, like production line workers, process workers, what we call in Australia pick and pack. So people who really just need to follow one-sentence instructions and work in a warehouse, that's pretty much what blue-collar or industrial recruitment is in Australia.
Can you tell us something about that? We've never had somebody on talking about it, and I don't think it's distinctively Australian, but what do you do? Just put ads in papers and build up a pipeline of these guys who are, you know, casual workers? How do you do that?
Well, it's not my area of expertise because I worked in white-collar or executive recruitment, but I have had some clients in this area.
Oh, okay.
But
no, sorry. I thought you – okay, go ahead.
But
go
pretty
ahead.
Much it is just running – advertisements in the print media. The online media is okay for those types of people, but generally they'll look in the local papers and they'll apply to ads in the paper. So you tend to get a good flow of people that are either unemployed or just looking for casual work like that, and they're happy to go and work in a factory or a warehouse on call for 7-8 hours a day, 5 days a week, but maybe less if that's what's required.
Really? And is there good money in that business?
It's not good money for recruiters. The margins are very low. It's a very casual or temporary dominated business. There is some permanent recruitment, but most employers in Australia prefer to keep their workforce as temporary as possible. So it's a huge area for daily payroll temps or casuals, as we'd call them, versus permanent recruitment. Because
so that's a big business there. I don't know if it's a big business in the United States.
It's huge,
Canada.
Man. Are you kidding me? Temps? It's huge.
Jerry.
It's huge. My sister company that I worked with for quite a while was one of the bigger temp firms here in the Midwest. And, it's all about running ads in the paper and just having people fill out applications in your office all day long.
For industrial labor. But
yeah, industrial.
Said,
and then they half of the time they call with, you know, they can't get a ride to work or they don't have a babysitter. I mean, it's a lot of high maintenance, huge high maintenance stuff.
Hey, Jerry.
It's Jason here.
Can you tell the recruiting animal that Dan is still not on?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Animal?
Okay, I'm going to bring him back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm bringing these new guys. Maureen's back on, and I think Dan, are you here?
I'm still here, mate.
Dan, okay, good. Congratulations, you're back.
Yep.
We're running out of time, but that's okay. I'll leave that, but I didn't know it was such a big business. Hey, you guys, come on. Okay, I don't know what questions. I have a bunch of questions. I don't know what to ask you. Do you guys, Michael Speck.
Yep.
Do you want to ask your question about CRM or ATS? We got William here just for you. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Michael, I was more interested to see sort of what the feeling is around whether or not people are moving in the US and Canada to CRM-based tools more than just your plain old ATS.
Billy?
Yeah, so I'd say probably not fast enough, but there's certainly a lot of talk about it. I'd say one of the bigger conferences over here is ERE, and that's certainly been something that got picked up on the radar last year, and I would expect it to be, particularly in a down market, starting to pick up more as far as people either building their own with, open source or looking to buy stuff when times get better.
Yeah.
Okay, we had a guy. Go ahead. We had a guy for 2 weeks ago. The guest on the show was a guy named Mike Johnston. He's the sales guy at Avature. Are you familiar with them, Mike? Michael Speck.
Yes, I am.
And are you? Or is this a real hobby horse of yours?
It's an interesting thing because I'm seeing more. Many of the clients I'm talking to are wanting to move, especially in the down market, to more of sort of a relationship building approach. And it's really interesting to see when you add that in with the social media and how that adds, comes together. And there's a number of vendors now in Australia that are starting to offer those tools. So it's interesting to see if the same sort of trend was going on the other side of the pond.
Okay, so just before we move on that, when you say the CRM, customer relationship management software, and it integrates well with social media, what do you mean exactly? The guy from Avature, Mike, he told us that their tool can go into a social media network, like Facebook, I guess, and scrape all the information and dump it into your database. Is that what you're talking about?
To a degree, but I said that's very low tech. It's more as we, as you're developing relationships, which is what social media is allowing us to do. You're going to have information about people that you know you may want to hire next year or in 6 months or in 2 years' time, and it's collecting that. It's not necessarily the scraping of just going and collecting a whole lot of information. It's more targeted about as you move through using Twitter or blogs or Facebook or whatever or LinkedIn, you'll come across these people, and you need somewhere to store that information so you can go back to them.
So Animal, if I can break in, I think if I'm hearing correctly, that sounds more like initially contact management. So if you were to look at, say, Outlook and you have contacts, you know, that's kind of where you can keep a Rolodex, a virtual Rolodex of information. And a lot of ATSs have that. What they don't have is a way of taking those contacts and formatting some sort of direct email campaign or leveraging existing social media to communicate with them with that information. I think that's very kind of bleeding edge, and a lot of people are talking about it, but right now it's more of certainly a cobblestone or patchwork or stuff.
Okay, so let me just come to one more question about that. You said you can. It allows you to have an email campaign, maybe touch base with people on a regular mass mailing basis, but when you said it works with social networks, what does that mean exactly?
Well, let me maybe rephrase when it says it works. I mean, when you're in social media, you're getting contacts from people, you can put that into a contact database. What hasn't happened yet is I've not seen an ATS that says, you know what, if you have a bunch of people that only have their Twitter account, so to speak, set up, there's not a way in which you can create a 140-character message and shoot it out from your ATS, and it goes through Twitter and reaches those people. You still have to be bound by that platform, Twitter, for example, in order to communicate with them.
Yeah. And I think we'll see tools that start to bring all that together. So you've got, once you are running those campaigns and those communications, you're actually collecting that information within the tool to make so you can understand the touch points that you've had with these prospects.
Right. It's the same thing with LinkedIn. I mean, LinkedIn's pretty much a closed network.
Yeah.
Unless somebody directly connects with you or in the corporate solution willingly shows you their email address or phone number, then you can kind of run and take that and put it in your contact database and then farm it from there. Otherwise, everything else is very platform-centric.
Okay, I don't know what you guys are talking about. You keep talking about social networks, and then you complain that Twitter doesn't give you more than 150 characters. I don't know what you're talking about. We're going to put that to the side. Anybody else have a burning question about that before, or am I the only one who finds it dull? Okay.
I'm asleep on it.
Yeah, Ross.
Yes, Animal.
So you're a trainer, am I right?
That's right.
Okay, so you train third-party recruiters. Who do you train? Very quickly, tell me.
Yeah, mainly. Yeah, third-party recruiters would be 90% of my clientele.
Okay, so what's your big issue? What are the big problems those guys have that they have trouble dealing with? What do they need to learn most? What kind of questions are you asking?
And that's what I was going to ask, Animal.
Okay, you.
Okay,
ask.
Well,
I'd like to ask that, Ross. I'd like to ask that very same question.
Okay, great. Well, the things that I see in Australian recruiters that I focus on, firstly, is interviewing. I think very few recruiters are trained how to properly conduct an interview, and they generally do it very poorly. They don't ask properly structured, behavioural-based questions. They don't probe motivations effectively. They ask too many opinion-based questions, not evidence-based questions. And this is a fundamental skill of a recruiter. It's like a builder being able to use a drill
And I think too many recruiters just are very poor interviewers, and as a result, when they refer candidates to clients, it's luck. You know, they're hoping that the clients will accept their recommendation. They don't provide sufficient evidence that the candidate has the skills, competencies, and motivations to do the job.
Okay,
so that's
okay,
an
you're
area.
Going on. Come on, give us some examples. Like, what are they saying that's not right, and what are you telling them to do that's right? I mean, you had me really interested at the beginning. Then you got into the, I don't know, the babble gab. Just tell me, what do you tell them? What do they do that's wrong? What do you tell them to do that's right?
Okay,
Maureen,
great. Okay,
Maureen's
so.
Back here. Maureen, do you like this guy's accent?
I do.
How does he compare to the Workforce?
Well, he has a deep voice like Workforce.
Yeah.
But how does he compare to Workforce?
Okay, on the...
Think
on
about
the,
it.
On the sexiness scale, we're trying to figure out if voices, you know, get you places. Will this guy's voice get him somewhere?
Oh, his accent would definitely get him places. In my business,
yeah.
Here in the States, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Women would swoon.
They,
gatekeepers would
okay.
swoon.
That's all I wanted to know. Yeah, he's a good speaker. Okay. Okay, Russ. You got your ego going. Give us
okay.
a minute,
yeah,
will you?
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so to answer the question, one of my pet hates is the recruiter says, so what are your greatest strengths?
Yeah.
Now, it's just a pathetic question because you're asking the candidate to self-report. So, of course, candidates
to what?
Prepare.
To what? You're asking the candidate to what?
Self-report. In other words, they're
self-report.
Giving their opinion.
Self-report. Okay. I got you.
Yeah. So they're just giving their opinion, and they have the textbook answer. You know, I'm committed, I'm passionate, blah, blah, blah. It's
team
all rubbish.
Player. You have a lot of team
player.
Down there.
You know, I've got great communication skills.
Everyone's
a complete
player.
Rubbish. So
yeah,
the question,
okay.
So the question that I suggest that they ask is to the candidate. So at your last performance appraisal, what did your manager highlight as being a strength of your performance, or what achievements did your manager highlight from the last 3 months, 6 months, 12 months? Because then
mm-hmm.
you're asking
like
for evidence. You're asking for facts. You're asking to think about what has happened rather than create this puff answer, which means nothing.
And
that's
how do you
global.
Know if he's lying?
I
how
like
do you know
that.
If he's lying?
Well, you don't know, but what you can do is if you do a reference check, you can calibrate the answer the candidate's given you with the referee. So that's an easy way after the event, but when they're answering, it's much harder to make
okay,
something
okay, we got your picture.
Off.
Do you have a story for us to back up what you're saying?
Not a specific story.
We don't need
story.
A story. We don't need a story. Does Mike or Danny, it's your turn. You want? I like that. Thank you, Ross. Does anybody else want to tell something relevant, a recruiting tip, for instance, of that you know you think is your greatest secret or whatever?
Anybody want to step up to the firing squad?
There's no firing squad.
You sure?
No.
Oh, I'll continue talking to Ross.
He's attracting people in.
I'll continue talking to Ross if you want. You want to? Come on. Do you have a secret? Do you want to share a tip for your brothers in America?
Yeah, well, I can jump in again if you want something else from me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, another pet hate of mine is when recruiters say, what's your ideal job? Or what would you love to do? Because it's purely speculation. You want to know what they have done. So you say, tell me the types of jobs you have applied for specifically, because what they're applying for is what they believe they can really get. Whereas if you say, well, what would you really like, then they'll give you their wish list, probably jobs they have no chance of getting.
I don't know why you'd ask what are jobs they've applied for. It's just for a corporate recruiter, because in my business, we go out looking for people we know can probably do the job we want, right? So who are you talking to there? A corporate recruiter who's handling applicants from a job ad?
Well,
you've
got to interview the guy that you get, Animal. I mean...
But I never ask him what jobs he's applying for, because he's usually not. I'm going after the passive candidates, right?
Yeah, well, we'll call that search in Australia, and so that's not really a valid question for a search consultant. But when you've
okay.
got candidates applying for jobs, then you would ask that question.
Okay, it makes sense. Very nice. Got a third? Number
well, from
three?
My hunting side, I used to ask that for so I would find out who other corporates might be recruiting so I could get them on my call list to actually find some more business.
Sorry, what did you say there, Danny?
When I used to work for my agencies, if I was talking to candidates, I'd ask where else they were applying or interviewing, so I could get some, especially when there was less candidates than clients at the time, so I could find some more people to actually make money out of.
You know what? I have to tell you something. I was advised to do that when I first started recruiting, and I always felt that was really below the belt. I felt, you know, you're pretending to be sincere to this person, and in fact, you're just looking so you can put more competition against him in the job he's applying for. Isn't that true?
It depends on if you got anywhere, but if the person was, hopefully you'd place them first.
Huh?
I would never put someone in competition with a candidate of mine that told me about the job. So, I mean,
right.
you have to use discretion there.
Yeah, but they're outlaws. They're outlaws down there, Jerry. Then Danny's the worst. Danny, let me ask you another question. Do you have any stories for us from the children's books that, you know, relate to have moral lessons for recruiters?
I think the Platypus one worked well for me. I love that. It's a nightly read at my house. It's all about keeping your head up and keeping positive and waiting for the next opportunity to come your way, but you've actually got to be into it, actually in the market for it to happen to you.
Okay, so you have to be tenacious to be a recruiter. Is that what you're saying?
You have to be tenacious. You have to take your lumps. You have to have people say no to you and go on to the next one and take rejection and move on, or else you'll get nowhere.
Okay, so how do you do that? Is that just your nature, or do you have a special philosophy that helps you do it?
I went to a training session once. It was purely sales, hardcore sales, and there was a guy, Brian Tracy. And he said that it took him four calls to make a dollar. So every time someone gave him a rejection, he'd say thanks for the 25, and that's always worked for me. It's
really?
I don't take it. You can't take it as a personal insult unless there's one in there. But I've rarely had one in the 12 years I've been recruiting. You just move on to the next one.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Winnie the Pooh?
I haven't got too much into Winnie the Pooh as yet. My son's not old enough yet.
Oh, okay. Okay, how old's your son?
Too many words. He's five. He would be five.
Five. So, you know, we're looking at the world in really the basic terms, right? Michael Speck, you have a son, too. Do you derive lessons about recruiting from his books that you read them or that you used to? He must be about 11 years old now, right, or 12?
He is 11. No, I don't derive lessons from the books because mainly the books he reads now are all about killing things and science fiction.
Recruiters say they eat what they kill. They're salespeople. Don't you guys say that down there?
Everyone's a salesperson without a doubt.
Okay, Mike, back to you. Mike, Michael Speck, do you have something else you want to talk about? You still got William here. Do you want to ask a techie question?
No techie questions. More of a comment around, but we're talking a lot of recruiters at the moment in Australia don't seem to treat the candidates as people. And I get a lot of feedback from candidates that I talk to and work with about how they just are rejected by these recruiters, not even told rejection, they're just point blank ignored. And there's a real growing animosity against these, as you were saying, Animal, the corporate recruiter.
Okay, so that's the issue you're talking about there is candidate experience. You think it's important, right?
Very much important because there's going to be lots and lots of candidates and you're going to, with the market downturning, and you're still going to want to find the best candidate, and so you've got to be able to deal with those people. It's not just churning and burning.
That's an employment branding issue, right?
Yeah. Although you don't like the word branding, so we won't go there.
That's true, but, you know, I'm willing to take it when the context is right. Maureen is here. You know, you got William, who's a real expert, as far as I know, in, like, recruiting techie stuff. And you got Maureen, who's, like, a premier telephone sourcer in the recruiter sphere. Let me ask you, do you guys do any telephone sourcing? I imagine you don't, Mike, because you're inside a corporation. But what about Ross and Danny?
Well, I will. For high-level roles in my organisation here, I'll probably not so much phone sourcing. I'll just go and identify people via LinkedIn and call them. And
LinkedIn.
Get that way for it.
Isn't that like the wimp's way? I mean, How do you know? What if there's nobody on LinkedIn?
I didn't think I wasn't a wimp.
Okay. But you're an Australian. Maureen, you want to ask him some questions about telephone sourcing?
Well, it sounds like he doesn't do a lot of it. It sounds like he depends on the LinkedIn and the social networks.
Is that good enough for you, Dan?
At the moment, yeah.
What is it you're placing mostly?
Well, it's hiring for actual my company, so I'm in an internal role here. But
you're
the
internal,
roles
but you've been external, though, too, right? You've been external.
Yeah, that's right. That's how I started. Yeah, that's how I started.
But no telephone sourcing.
Well, it was more from an executive search facility. That's pretty much the only areas I saw it done way back 5-6 years ago when I was agency size. It wasn't part of a general makeup for an agency. It was just something, if someone's doing an executive search, that's what they would use.
Let's ask Ross. He trains a lot of people. Maureen, we'll ask Ross. Do a lot of recruiters do telephone sourcing down there, Ross?
No, I think it's a skill that's sorely lacking.
Oh, Maureen, you're opening a huge market for her.
Maureen,
that's right,
down under.
I think Maureen Down Under could be a very good website.
Hey, yeah,
Maureen
Down
Under.
Well,
I like
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. Sourcing Down Under. Sourcing Down
Somebody
under.
Get that
.com.
Domain name.
Yeah. Hey, how many people in Australia?
21 million.
21. Yeah.
21 million. That's smaller than Canada. And where we've got lots of snow, you've got like desert or something there, right?
That's right.
What a desert.
So it's not much of a country. Is most of the recruiting happening in like two cities or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. The major cities are Sydney and Melbourne. Sydney's about 4.5 million, and Melbourne's about 3.5 million.
Well, those
and
are pretty good.
Yeah,
those are pretty good.
Time.
I mean, there's a lot of room for telephone sourcing in two big cities like that, right, Maureen?
There sure is. I've been told that Australia is like America was in the 60s. Anybody hear that? Has anybody else heard that?
In what regard, Maureen?
Well, that makes me nostalgia.
No, I think I've heard also that you guys are more sexist. You're more kind of provincial. Is that right?
Compared to who?
The modern world. The leading edge.
The modern world.
Why do they have so many actors and actresses coming out of Australia?
Because they go to America to get work, because in Australia they can't earn a living. There's just not enough money in it.
Yeah, but it's the same from Canada. Everybody wants to go down there. Do you guys have the same kind of inferiority complex with regard to the United States that we have, or am I right that, you know, really, you feel like men without the U.S. Making you feel, you know, nervous?
Well, I think we're
lucky
with George W. Bush
right next door to us.
You know, one at a time, please. I didn't understand a word you said. Danny first. He's the leader. Danny's the leader.
Sorry, guys. We're kind of lucky. We've got New Zealand right next door to us that we can feel superior over. So
they're the Canada of the South Pacific. Is that what you're saying? You know, they go around bragging how they're, you know, they're a tiny little island and they're nuclear free. Who cares? Doesn't make any difference
right.
in the whole world.
Are you all worried about what's happening in the U.S.?
Yes, it makes a lot of headlines.
You are worried about it.
Well, certainly the media is worried about it. It's putting a lot of headlines into websites and to newspapers. But the unemployment rate in Australia is 4.4%, and the US is 7.2%. So the full impact of the global financial crisis hasn't really shown up in the employment figures yet. But there's a lot of articles in the paper saying, well, you wait till June, and then it'll be 6.5%.
Same as here. Same as here. We just got a new budget today with a huge, you know, deficit spending plan for what's coming up. But Maureen, listen, you know what? I don't know. The sound quality isn't that great, but it must be. How expensive is it to call Australia from the United States? You could do your sourcing over there.
I have done a little bit of sourcing in Australia, not a lot, but I have a pay one price. A long distance, so I don't really know how much it is.
Oh, really? Okay, so you can she can recruit in Australia. The gatekeepers there are totally naive because they rarely encountered anybody like you. I mean, it's easy pickings. I mean, it sounds like heaven, right?
Maureen, basically, I'm saying go hire some more actors.
Yeah.
You know what, you guys, hold on. You guys from Australia, you know about Obama, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know everybody's taking an Obama pledge? They're pledging what they're going to do for the world to make it a nicer place. You know, people can say that they're going to put an end to AIDS, or they're going to say hi to people in the street. It can be big or be small. Are you guys ready to take a pledge and say what you're going to do in the next year to make this a nicer world?
Yep.
Wasn't it George Bush Senior that talked about a kinder, gentler world?
Yeah, but Obama's going to take that over after.
Well, now we're
Bush
talking about a neutered one. That's all.
Okay. So let's move on. Does anybody have any questions, or should I just continue?
No,
just
saying something about what Maureen said is that I've read a couple of her suggested scripts on various blogs, and I think they'd do extremely well in Australia. I think receptionists, switchboard operators are not at all vigilant for sources, and I think she'd have a field day in Australia.
A field day. I love that.
Me
I'll
too.
Do it with you, Maureen. Sounds like fun.
Okay. We'll go together.
Okay. Okay, so let's go back. Well, you know, we'll take as a Ross's experience as a start-off place. Ross, do you speak to a lot? Do you go right in-house? How do you do your training?
Yeah, most of it is in-house for third-party recruiters. So I'll go in and do half a day or a day on a particular topic.
He sounds a bit like one of the Beatles, doesn't he?
Kind of.
Yeah, are you
yeah.
sure you're from Australia and not Liverpool? Hey,
well,
so you know a lot of recruiters. So if we're talking to you, you've had a experience with a wide range of recruiters. Is that right? Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, so you already told us recruiters, lots of them are lousy interviewers. You gave us some examples. Tell us something else, the areas that they have to improve that maybe American recruiters have to improve as well.
Yeah, another one that's one of my favorites is, and I don't know how prevalent it is in the U.S., is this concept of allowing the client to shop the job around to other recruiters. So, in other words, as a third-party recruiter, you're competing against two or three or four others to fill the vacancy, and I think that's ridiculous, and that's one of the things that I work with recruiters and train them in how to gain exclusivity and help the client understand it's in their interest to actually give the job exclusively to one recruiter.
Okay, now let me tell you that for contingency recruiters over here, that's par for the course. So you tell us what we should do to avoid that. Go ahead.
Well, on my website, I've got an article with the 8 reasons. But,
we're not reading your website now, if you haven't noticed. Come on, speak up.
Well, basically, it's because it doesn't actually help the value of the job in the marketplace. If you're out there and there's three or four others pitching to the same candidate pool, then it's the classic scarcity mentality, which is, well, if this job's so good, why are so many people trying to pitch it to me? People just get suspicious. It's like a real estate. It's like having three real estate agent signs on a house. You immediately think who was murdered in that house. So I think it's one of the things that recruiters are very poor at explaining to clients, that it doesn't help their branding in the marketplace when three or four recruiters call
JD,
the same candidate.
I got some real experts to talk to you about that. JD, what do you think?
About what part?
Well, you heard him. What, do you agree with this guy or not?
Oh, Animal, I think you caught him. Don't make him admit he wasn't listening.
He wasn't listening.
Yeah,
I
was listening.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm sleeping already. He looks like Homer Simpson, the drool is coming out
no,
of his
mouth. No, I was listening. You know, I think exclusivity is a great thing. I think, though, most recruiters, when they're told that they have an exclusive from the company, it's not really an exclusive. I think a true exclusive search would be that no matter where the hire comes from, the recruiter gets their money.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a retained search, right?
No. It's the fee is earned when the candidate accepts, but the agreement is that the company says to the recruiter, you are the one filling it, and to back that, no matter where the hire comes from, you'll get paid. So
okay,
will,
what do you mean by
we
that?
We will include you in the process, so at least we, you know.
What does that mean, JD? You're confusing me. Jerry, let's go to Jerry. Gary, do you have a rebuttal or an answer or reply to what Ross said about being a contingent recruiter and working the same jobs that someone else is working?
Well, that part of it?
I mean, the sad case is that that's usually how it is until you've got a better relationship with your clients.
Mm-hmm.
But on the front end, your first time recruiting for a company, until you've demonstrated your expertise and knowledge, you're gonna have a hard time asking for an exclusive relationship until you've proven yourself.
Yeah, but you know what the problem with that, Jerry, and you're right, I think, is that, you know, if you make a whole bunch of placements with a company and they pay you a whole bunch of money, when you come to them and say, okay, well, now I want you to put me on retainer, they probably know that you're not prepared to walk away from them as a client if they say no.
Yeah, but I don't ask for retainers, though I think we're getting caught up on the word exclusive here.
Okay.
I mean, you could be exclusive with a company and not be retained.
Sure.
And they expect that you're going to find the person, and, you know, in most cases you do, right?
Hey, you know, some bozo on Twitter was listening to us, and he said he couldn't understand the Canadian and Australian accents. I don't have an accent, okay? Canadians don't have accents. I can't understand these other guys either, but you look, the show's bogging down. What do you want to talk about?
The show's
Billy,
bogging
do you have
down.
Question?
I like it. It's going great. The baby
Billy,
is throwing me
Billy,
off.
Hey, but Maureen, you know, if she can ask a question, is that why she's talking into the phone? Billy.
Maureen.
Billy Uranga, are you there?
Give me a break.
Yep,
I'm trying to get her to sleep.
You have a question for the Australians? We got 15 minutes left. Come on.
No, I'd like to see them actually run the show.
Okay, well, I don't think they got it in them. Okay.
I think they do. I think that they're on the money here. Why do you think it's bogging down? It's going
okay.
great.
I have a question, Animal, for
yeah.
Ross.
Go ahead.
We'll get, and I guess, Ross, do you think there's an issue with getting exclusivity because the many recruiters aren't doing a good job for their clients? Or is it more of a client expectation?
Well, its recruiters aren't doing a good job, and frankly, they've never been trained how to actually pitch for exclusivity. So as a result, they don't ask for it. So that's the first and major problem.
Did you say there were 8 points to exclusivity?
Yes.
What are they?
Do you want me to go through the whole 8 or just send you the link to my website?
Just go through them fast.
Yeah, go through them.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine. So I've given you the first one. The second one is that quantity of candidates referred becomes more important than finding the best candidate. Because you're up against a competitor, all you want to do is just fill the job ahead of your competitors. So you're
blind them with paperwork.
It isn't necessarily the best candidate.
Yeah.
It's just whoever will do that'll beat the competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, the client does more work and pays the same fee. If they're communicating with 3 or 4 recruiters and they're giving out job descriptions, if they're setting interview times, giving feedback, they're tripling or quadrupling their work, and they don't get a discount on the fee. They're still paying the same fee. So you say to the client, why invest all that extra time with 3 or 4 additional recruiters? Just give it to me. You'll save money and pay the same price. And what happens then? The client does more work. They resent it. They start to resent all these emails and communication from 4 or 5 different recruiters, and therefore they stop communicating. They don't give feedback on resumes, and they just start to lose interest, and they just try and do everything with the fewest number of emails possible, and they don't want to talk to people on the phone. Well, certainly that's what happens here in Australia. Exclusivity also, you tell the client, helps the recruiter with the time to do the job thoroughly. Because if they're just in a resume race, how does that benefit the client? The client just gets flooded with resumes and they don't actually get a proper screen or search and screen of the market. Next one.
What
reality
number
is
are we
that,
at already? I'm falling asleep.
Okay, we've done 5. We've got 3 to go.
The baby's putting me to sleep.
3 more.
But
okay,
we
well, the other reality is that all recruiters give priority to exclusive jobs. So you say to the client, well, my priority is exclusive work. So if you want to get to the top of the queue, give me the work exclusively. Next one, the best candidates are put forward to exclusive jobs because with multi-listed jobs, the clients generally fart-ass around and muck around and you don't want your best candidates mucked around. And the 8th reason is, well, accountants don't do it. I mean, you don't give your tax details to 3 different accountants and tell tell the accountant, well, whoever does my tax return first, I'll pay you the fee, and the other two miss out.
Hey, I love it.
So
that's the best one. I think that's the best one. I like that.
Okay, use it.
Okay. I'm going to use it.
Okay.
I love it.
From a client point of view, though, I wouldn't, agencies come to me, I wouldn't give them exclusivity until I knew what they could do, because they're representing my brand out there. If I don't know them, you know, they've got to be able to represent me and my company properly, and I've got to have a relationship so that would happen.
Fair enough, and that's why I say that the key is the training, so the recruiter knows how to do it and can put forward a compelling case. If they don't put forward a compelling case, well, why should the client go with them exclusively?
Yeah, I mean, I would only ask for exclusivity if you could back it up.
Dan gave a really good rebuttal there, and it's backed up by what Jerry said, that, yeah, until they get to know you, why should they do it? Give it out to a few people and see who does the best job, then go with them again next time until they screw up. Right? Okay.
Only one chance.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Do you guys all network together like it seems like we're trying to do here in the U.S., you know, with social networks, and we have local recruiters' lunches. We do, you know, state associations. We do conferences. I mean, is it a solo event down there, or do you guys all network with each other and split placements and that kind of thing?
Look, I haven't seen a lot of splits going on. I don't know of much in the way of networking things here. I know Michael was part of a Twitter group here in Melbourne, or a social media one. There's agency associations that kind of get together, but everyone's a bit too competitive. I think it's kind of sharing information that might give their competitors a one-up.
Yeah, I think there's not enough collaboration and sharing at this stage. It is starting to take place, but I think as Ross said, yeah, there's a viewpoint that it is too competitive.
Someone sent me an invitation to a recruiter's social network for Australia just before the show started. Are you guys members of that?
Yeah, that's been out the other day.
Aussie Recruiters.
There's 300 members or something like that one, yeah?
Yeah, I got it from Jorge Albinagorta. Do you know him?
Yes.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Jorge. Yeah, I've known Jorge for four or five years.
They do know each other, see? Okay, so look, we're going to have to keep going. Job boards, you guys use them. Internet, so some of you guys are internet sources. Is that you, Danny?
Nah, I'll search it, but it's not my core gig.
It's not your corgi?
Core job. I'm not, no, that's English.
What do you do, Dan? What do you do?
I head up an internal recruitment department.
For what kind of company?
For a software company.
Okay.
There's 600 of us across the country.
Yeah, and so what's your main technique for finding people?
The one that gets used and we spend the most money on would just be purely on job boards, which is boring, but it's all that my boss will pay for.
Yeah.
I use LinkedIn just to find people that way. We have
a referral scheme. What's your success rate? Hey, listen to me. What's your success rate with LinkedIn?
Of actual people that I call?
Not actual people. Like, how many people do you find in there? And then of those, you know. But really, how many good people do you find in LinkedIn? Lots of them?
It's a small amount.
Small amount.
There's a lot of work that goes into just getting those few, so.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Awesome.
Searching on LinkedIn is very time-consuming, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, it's the same thing, though, with job boards. Do you just place ads, or do you go in there and look at the people in the database?
It's only just moving to that here. We've got probably a couple of main job boards. They haven't really gone into the niche job boards too hard. It's only just a growing area. So the biggest
I didn't say anything about niche job boards. Well, maybe you've got a big job board like, I don't know, maybe Hot Jobs is down there, or Career Builder.
There's one Seek.
What?
Seek have only just bought in. Seek have only just relaunched the ability to actually search through their website.
Maureen is right.
People.
You guys are living in the past. You're far behind us, right? You know, Jerry had a question. Hold on. I'm asking the questions, okay? Jerry had a question as well. What percentage of companies use recruiters? Lots of them or very few? When you call people up, do they know what you do, or do you have to explain your kind of a business?
I think that there's a bit of tendency to move away from third parties, especially at the moment when, especially if people got an internal recruiting function. People have no idea what I do when I call them up.
But companies, when people get called by recruiters, do they know who the recruiter is, or do they have to explain who they are, what they do?
The main recruiting companies.
What?
Companies know what recruiters do.
Ross, let's go to Ross now. Danny blew it. Ross, do people know what recruiters do in Australia?
Yes.
Everybody?
Yes, everyone. And I would say about 60-65% would use external recruiters, and you've got about 35% that would do it themselves.
That is an excellent answer.
Okay, now Danny
This guy's going famous on us here.
Danny said that people are moving away from third-party recruiters to build up their internal recruiting staff. Is that true? Yes or no?
Yes, and I think the current economic climate may have halted that, but certainly last year the trend was to build up internal recruitment staff.
Yeah, because Maureen told me that, and everybody else in her group, that the internal recruiting staffs are being decimated in the United States. Right, Maureen?
And that's true in Australia as well, but I think it's swings and roundabouts in some regards. We'll get back to a growth in internal recruiters. There are some organisations, Oracle for one, that does a very good job with internal recruiters.
Okay. Are there food banks in Australia?
What?
No, I'm just talking about the recruiters losing their jobs. Michael Speck. Mike, are you still with us?
Yep.
Okay, you know, I've known you longest. You're the first guy I ever heard the word OPML from, okay? I'll never forget that. So is there anything you'd like to say? We're almost through.
Just that it's been fun, and I think we should do more of this in Australia. It's probably the one thing that we're lacking in sort of the communication and connection.
Yeah, whatever that means, okay?
Do you guys know anything about the Tasmanian devil? My son wanted me to ask that. What's the lifespan of a Tasmanian devil from your personal experience?
About 10 years, I think.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, hold on. The guy on Twitter wants you to mention, hold on, I'll mention it for him before we go. There's another social network called Recruitment 2.0 Asia Pacific. Are you guys aware of that?
No.
Yes.
Okay, so there's, you know what, you're telling us there's nothing. We just found two social networks exclusively for recruiters. And anyway, there's no geography. You guys could be, you know, members of recruiting blogs and Fordyce Letter Network. I mean, like, it's not like you're far away. You're only as far away as the Internet. That's not far away at all. I don't understand where you're coming from. But I want to thank my good friend, my good new friend, Jerry Albright of verbalsummary.com. Michael Speck, do you have a website now or a blog? What's your blog now? You do. What's your blog's URL?
Just speck.com.au.
You know, but I got to ask you something. Speck is not an easy name. Why did you make your URL Speck? SPECHT.com. Is that it?
Because it's easy. It's an easy domain to own.
Yeah, right, but nobody can find it, but that's another story. Okay, Danny Nauru, what's the name? What's your blog address?
It's saysomethingdan.blogspot.com.
Dan.blogspot.com?
Say something, Dan.
Oh, saysomethingdan.blogspot.com. Are you, like, related to the Pandit Nauru, that Nauru family?
Way back a long way, apparently so, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. You just spell it a bit differently, but it sounds the same.
Huh. When the grandfather arrived here.
Yes, Animal.
Ross, okay. RossClennett or TT?
TT.
Ross Clennett. That's double N, double T, .com. I've enjoyed talking to you guys. It wasn't the most organized show. I'm not used to dealing with three people with diverse backgrounds at once. That's my feeling. I was wrong, but thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Animal.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.
See y'all. See you guys.